It's TechBiter Worldwide with Bill Blinn. The latest on programs and policies, helpful hints, and a bit of occasional nonsense. All in more or less plain English.
Podcast number 887 for the 21st of June, 2024. This week, when I noticed a disk drive problem early one Saturday morning, I decided it was time to replace an aging cabinet filled with aging disk drives. A significant performance boost was a welcome extra. In short circuits, Microsoft would like you not to use cleanup applications such as CCleaner because they might damage the registry. But now they're offering a CCleaner-like app called PC Manager. And editing environment variables is much easier today than it was 40 years ago with Edlin on an early DOS computer. And an addition to Microsoft's Power Toys makes it even better. Air Force test pilot Chuck Yeager is quoted as having said, "Never wait for trouble." Whether you're a Yeager fan or not, that's good advice if you take it to mean, as I do, to prepare for trouble and to act immediately when you spot a problem on the horizon. Later, Yeager said, "I was always afraid of dying. Always. It was my fear that made me learn everything I could about my airplane and my emergency equipment and kept me flying respectful of my machine and always alert in the cockpit." So that was on my mind on Saturday, the 1st of June, 2024, when I started the computer and everything seemed to be going well until I tried to retrieve a file from Drive D. It wasn't there. In fact, the entire Drive D wasn't there. Nor were drives E, F, G, H, or I. That's not a good way to start a Saturday morning. Because all the drives in an external cabinet were offline, I concluded that the problem was either with the electronics in the cabinet, or the power supply in the cabinet, or the power to the cabinet. After all, it's pretty unlikely that four disk drives had failed simultaneously. There was no change when I used a cable from a second power source. Cycling the power switch made no difference. The fan had more dust than I'd like, so I used compressed air to clean it. After that, the drives powered up. When I moved the power cable back to its usual source, the drives still powered up. Maybe the fan was dirtier than I thought, but I really don't think the designers created a cabinet that's smart enough to detect a fan with too much dust. There was something else going on. If the problem was with the cabinet, I didn't want to replace it. The cabinet holds four physical drives that are partitioned as six logical drives. Total space, about 11 terabytes. But I had thought about replacing the four drives with just one and not needing a cabinet. It was time to do so. Amazon had a Western Digital 12-terabyte external USB-C drive, but I wouldn't receive it for nearly 2 weeks. I wasn't sure that the existing hardware would continue to work for 2 weeks. Micro Center, less than 5 miles away, had the same drive at the same price, and I could pick it up that day. Well, there's a decision that wasn't very hard to make. I came home with a Western Digital disk drive, nominally rated at 12 terabytes, actual capacity about 11 terabytes. So about the same amount of disk space in a single drive at about 1/5 the size of the cabinet. For reasons known only to Western Digital, the drive is sold as a macOS drive, and Windows users need to format and partition the drive. Using the AOMI partition assistant, I deleted the Mac partition and created NTFS partitions matching those used on my Windows computer. The process consumed less than 10 minutes. I gave the new drives letters beginning with Q and labels that identified what their new drive letters would be at the end of the process, new D, new E, new F, and so forth. Then it was time to transfer data from the old drives to the new drive. I could have used Copy, XCopy, or RoboCopy. XCopy and RoboCopy can copy hidden and system files, and I wanted to do that. But I decided to use GoodSync instead after I turned off the option to skip hidden and system files. I need to be clear about the process of transferring more than 6 terabytes of data. It is not a fast process. The process was essentially complete after about 25 hours. One particularly long job ran overnight. Goodsink seemed to be uncomfortably slow, with one of the drives reporting completion time more than 5 hours in the future, so I halted that operation and switched to RoboCopy, and the job ran to completion in about 90 minutes. Next, I used the command disk part to reassign drive letters and label to update the drive labels to match what GoodSync would expect for my local backups. It was also necessary to make hidden and system directories visible temporarily so I could delete Backblaze tokens from the old drives to avoid problems while the old drives were still attached. I gave the old drives letter assignments beginning with Q, and I changed the labels to identify their previous assignments so that I could find any missing files quickly and easily. Names like old D, old E, old F, like that. I did have to reassign the folder for Google Drive because it still wanted to connect to the directory on the old drive. Otherwise, the process, while hugely time-consuming, was easy and straightforward. Otherwise, no errors, no problems, and a significant performance boost, even though the objective was only to restore reliability. I can't say this was a pleasant surprise because it really wasn't a surprise, but it was pleasant. If speed is your only consideration and you have no budgetary limits, the clear choice would be solid-state drives for everything. Most of us can't make that choice, though, because we do need to buy fuel for cars, food, and other frivolous things. So the solid-state boot disk in the computer can read 6,362 megabytes of data per second and write 2,061 megabytes per second. That compares to just 232 megabytes per second for reads and 218 megabytes per second for writes on the new disk drive. But that compares to the old drive's 143 megabytes per second reads and 142 megabytes per second writes. Those numbers are for sequential operations. Random reads and writes are slower. The new drive is just 5 1/4 inches by a little over 1.5 inches by 8 1/4 inches, while the old enclosure is 5.5 inches by 7 3/4 inches by 10 1/4 inches. So that's about 15 cubic inches for the new drive compared to nearly 437 cubic inches for the now retired unit. In general, the new disk drive reads and writes at about double the speeds of the old drives, and that performance improvement is highly visible, particularly when dealing with photographs, audio files, and video files. It's also noticeable when loading files, regardless of data type. The old disk drives were manufactured and placed in service between May 2013 and June 2017, so the youngest drive was 7 years old. The oldest drive had been in operation for 11 years. Drives are far more reliable now than they were, but any disk drive that's still operating after 5 years should be considered to be on borrowed time, and any use after a decade can be considered a minor miracle. You may be wondering about why I partitioned the new drive as 5 logical drives instead of just setting up a single large D. Well, that would have saved me a few minutes by eliminating the need to format 5 drives instead of 1 and the need to modify the drive labels later. But several applications expect to find their settings or data or other information on a drive other than D. I would have needed to identify the location of a macro application's definitions. All of the music files are on drive F, and that's where the players expect to find them. Drive H is set as the scratch directory for several applications. The TechBiter Worldwide website's development files are on drive D, but the staging website is on drive E. There's a directory called temp on 2 drives, D and E, and each has a different use. Resolving all of those issues, and more that I hadn't even thought of, would have taken several hours, and I certainly would have missed some, and they would have come back to bite me later. So that was my reason for duplicating the disk structure. If you find these podcasts useful, and I hope you do, might you consider a donation? There are no ads here, and support from listeners is the sole source of income. It's easy. Just visit the website and click the donate button near the top of any page. You can make a one-time donation or schedule a repeating donation every month. I thank you. And so does the cat. In short circuits, Crap Cleaner, later renamed Sea Cleaner, was an outstanding utility application until it wasn't. I stopped using it several years ago and used the free open-source BleachBit to find and remove junk files. Now, Microsoft has an offering in that space. PC Manager is free. You'll find it on the Microsoft Store. If it didn't suffer from some of Microsoft's typical heavy-handedness, I would recommend it. But because it does, I can't. The utility was designed by Microsoft's China branch. That may explain some of the "we know what's best for you" attitude. But probably not. Microsoft has never been a fan of cleaner applications such as CCleaner because the applications could accidentally delete important information from the registry. CCleaner is also available in the Microsoft Store, but Windows Defender has been known to flag it as a potentially unwanted program or pup. That's accurate because of CCleaner's behavior. When you first run PC Manager, you'll see that Windows wants you to have it start with Windows. I cleared that checkbox because I didn't want it to launch with Windows, at least until I had a chance to examine it. I was sure that Microsoft would make it easy for me to make that change later if I wanted to, and Microsoft did not disappoint. The initial screen pushes users to switch their default browser to Edge. There's no way to dismiss that message or to make it disappear forever, but you can ignore it. The main screen also offers PC Boost, Smart Boost, Health Check, Process Explorer, Deep Cleanup, and Startup. Looks comprehensive, doesn't it? Check out the images on the TechBiter Worldwide website. PC Boost terminates processes it considers to be unnecessary and deletes temporary files. If you enable Smart Boost, the process takes over automatically when RAM usage increases or when temporary files exceed 1 gigabyte. Deep Cleanup searches for old Windows Update files and deletes them, along with emptying the recycle bin and deleting website and application cache files. You can see what the application will delete and choose to overrule any of its choices. Process shows all of the running processes on the computer, and you can end any process as you would with Task Manager. You might also find this easier to use than Task Manager, so there's something that PC Manager has in its favor. Startup manages applications that launch on startup. The free startup delayer, I think, is far superior when you want to delay an application's startup. That's because PC Manager offers only a simple on or off function. One of the tabs in the protection section lists updates, but goofy is the only word that can accurately describe the results. PC Manager told me there was a security update, but Windows Update told me the computer was up to date. To confirm that, I had Windows Update check again, and I confirmed it a second time the next day. Nothing. And PC Manager also showed a bunch of needed driver updates, but Lenovo's commercial Vantage application from the manufacturer of the hardware told me everything was up to date. The browser management tab in the protection section didn't like my preference for the Vivaldi browser, wanted me to switch to Edge, but would grudgingly allow Chrome or Firefox. I simply canceled out of that dialogue. Taskbar repair was offered. Had I selected that, PC Manager would have performed several actions that would have made me quite sad. It would have put search back on the taskbar where I don't want it, and it would have removed StarDock's Start 11, which I use to customize the start menu and the taskbar. PC Manager has some useful features, and I'm not planning to remove it from my computer. But I'm also not planning to use it frequently. It may seem like I mention Microsoft's power toys every few weeks, and that's probably because I do. Developers keep adding new features to this remarkable collection of utilities. One of the most recent additions is an editor for environment variables. Maybe you remember the environment. Those who used PCs in the mid-1980s will recall needing to modify the environment to add a path to an executable file that you wanted to be able to run without the need to specify a fully qualified path. Failing to do so would result in an error that said the file, and I quote here, is not recognized as an internal or external command, operable program, or batch file. That's the diagnostic message you'll see today if the shell can't find what you told it to look for. And to the best of my knowledge, that is the exact same wording I remember from 40 years ago. Updating the environment required an editor such as Edlin, a line editor that was provided with early versions of DOS. Edlin has not been included with Microsoft operating systems since MS-DOS 6. It is not missed. The environment, however, is still there. The settings are probably in the registry now, so there's no file to locate and edit, and an option to edit variables has been available for a while, but accessing it is a little bit messy. The editor function offered by PowerToys is easier to access and visually more appealing. Existing entries can be modified or deleted, and new entries can be added. The editing process has been much easier since the transition to a graphical editor, and the latest iteration makes the process even easier. Errors were all too common in the old days when variables were run together in a single entry. The path environment is usually the longest entry, and being able to select, modify, move, or delete individual items makes that process far less troublesome. And, by the way, this is not an area for experimentation. If you don't know what an environment variable is, don't modify it or delete it. Trust me on that. Thanks for listening to TechBiter Worldwide. I'm Bill Blinn. There's more on the website, techbiter.com, and if you have a question or a comment, use the contact link you'll find there. Stop by again next week for another session.